This is J. Edward Bungay with Mr. William Scripps Kellogg at the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club in the afternoon of Monday, May the 14th, 1979. Mr. Kellogg, it's very nice of you to have me here for this interview. And I wonder if you could give me a little of your background before coming to La Jolla and your advent on the La Jolla scene.
I certainly will try to, Jack. I'm not sure how important this is going to be to anybody. Since you've asked me for this information, I'm glad to furnish it to you. To go way back a long time, 82 years, I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and was moved from there to Detroit, Michigan by my parents. My father was one of the officials of the Scripps-McRae League of Newspapers, and my mother was the daughter of William Armiger Scripps, one of the Scripps brothers who conducted that league and who founded the Detroit News many, many years ago. Shortly after going to Detroit, my parents moved to Kansas City, where my father again was publishing the Kansas City World, which is no longer in existence. My eldest sister, Ellen S. Scripps Kellogg, was then in high school, Central High in Kansas City. And the reason that I mention this incident is that it was the cause of my coming to California. Her class were having a hayride on a weekend, and older sister asked her younger brother, Willie, if he would care to join the older group. Of course, he said yes. There were two fine horses and a nice hay wagon capable of holding about 20 people. When they came to the first hill, most of the occupants, the high school boys and girls, got out of the wagon to make it easier for the horses to go up the hill. Well, little Willie thought he would look around the inside of the wagon. He did. He moved to the outside. He stepped on the brake. He slipped underneath the rear wheel. And the rear wheel, which was about 6 feet high and about three, with metal rims of 3 or 4 inches in diameter, went over his back and his hands. Amazingly enough, he only lost consciousness, and he was taken to a farmhouse nearby, and then his father came out in a brand new Ford from the Kansas City World to see how his son was getting along, if he was still here, there. Well, he was, and in a very few weeks of time, short weeks, he had recovered. And the doctor told my mother, your son, William, must be made of cast iron or India rubber because there's not a bone broken in his body. Amazingly enough, again, I lost all my fingernails because the wheels went over the ends of my fingers as well as my back. After I had sufficiently recovered, my father and mother sent me to California, to Altadena, California, where my grandfather, W.A. Scripps, was just about to build a beautiful home on Mariposa Avenue in that community. I saw him lay the first brick, and now it is my great pleasure to tell you that that house has, through the generations, been given to my wife and myself, and we still enjoy living there on occasions, although our main home right now is in La Jolla, California. Pasadena High School, Stanford University, World War I was the second lieutenant in the 220th Field Signal Battalion. Bring this up to the time that I met a and married a very charming lady, Alice Crow of Long Beach. She was also went to Stanford and also was engaged in war risk insurance work with the government during World War I. Speaking of early trips to La Jolla, where my father and mother had built a summer cottage in 1920, the same year that Alice and I were married, they came here primarily because of Ellen Browning Scripps, the great philanthropist of this community, and the maiden lady, sister of, half-sister of E.W. Scripps, and the full sister of my grandfather, W.A. Scripps. My mother was her niece, and I think Aunt Ellen liked her probably more than any of her other nieces. In any event, she always welcomed every member of our family to her lovely home in La Jolla. Jack, just a minute. In order to visit my Aunt Ellen Scripps, I came to La Jolla first with my mother and father in an old tourist, new then, automobile from Altadena to La Jolla about 1908. And then we came down here nearly every summer, 1808, 9, and 10. Not only in the summer, but during Christmas vacation, I would come down to visit my cousin Thomas Scripps, the son of Frederick Tudor Scripps, whose home was on Mission Bay, and he called it Braemar Manor, now the Catamaran Hotel. I came for the purpose of shooting ducks during the Christmas vacation, and we had some very fine times at that place. Later, when I was a little older, I was asked to go out to Miramar, which was E.W. Scripps' main California residence, and which he had established in the late 80s, to visit my cousins. And here again, we had a great deal of merriment and fun. I was probably 15 years old at the time, and there were three young men, slightly older, who thought they would play a prank on their cousin Kellogg. So they showed me my room, said goodnight, and then left me. When I turned the sheets down, I jumped and yelled, for here, there, in bed was a live frog. And I could hear the roars of laughter out in the hallway. Oh, I'd say, stop it a minute. Aunt Ellen's half-sister also was here, living at the Wisteria Cottage near Aunt Ellen's house on the same property, as a matter of fact, which is now known as Cole's Bookstore. Before my wife and I were married, my family brought us both down to La Jolla to meet Aunt Ellen and Aunt Virginia. We were late in arrival, so that Alice Crow had no chance of meeting them until the next morning. But she was assigned a bedroom in the Wisteria Cottage, which belonged to Aunt Virginia. She had a pleasant evening, but the next morning, when she was combing her long, dark hair before a mirror, the door suddenly was swung open, and there stood Aunt Virginia. She surveyed Alice up and down, put her hands on her hips, nodded her head, and said in a loud voice, "You will do." never an explanation as to who she was or anything else. It was always remarkable to me that Alice married me shortly thereafter. Now stop it again, Jay. Yeah, I've got it. Frederick William Kellogg, my father, was interested in newspapers all of his life. And after he left the Scripps-McRae League, he came to California and started and took charge of the San Francisco Call, changing it from a morning evening to an evening paper, from a morning newspaper to an evening paper. He then came to Los Angeles and acquired the Los Angeles Express. And with that Los Angeles Express, he built a chain of 15 separate newspapers in small communities surrounding Los Angeles. They were very successful. And in 1928, he sold the entire chain to Colonel Ira C. Copley of Chicago, Illinois, who had four newspapers in Illinois. Hold it a minute. Being a tremendously energetic man, F.W. Kellogg looked around for something to do. Amazingly enough, he found that in La Jolla there had been a group of about 200 individuals, of which he was not a member, who had started what they called the La Jolla Beach and Yacht Club. Why they ever thought they could have a yacht harbor out of the small little lagoon adjacent to their property is a mystery. In any event, they were very glad to get rid of it when F.W. Kellogg offered them a fair sum for the entire property. And then at the same time, he urged my mother to purchase lots which were going almost for taxes between the La Jolla Beach and Yacht Club and the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. Although she didn't approve too highly, she finally acceded to his wishes, which later proved to be a wonderful thing for all her heirs and relatives. F.W. Kellogg immediately changed the name of the La Jolla Beach and Yacht Club, which had been registered in Sacramento, California, to the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club. And he put in four tennis courts and an Olympic-sized swimming pool. He also built several wings of apartments and was planning on more and continuing to enlarge it when he became ill. That's the best stuff. Are we on? It was in 1935 that he acquired the property, and a year or so later was when he became quite ill. He passed away on a steamship heading for Japan, which country he loved dearly. And I, as his son, therefore took over, resigned my newspaper position with the Glendale News Press as publisher of the Glendale News Press, and took over his estate, the largest part of which was here in La Jolla. Prior to his death, F.W. had constructed a very unusual room, which he called the Marine Room, which was directly on the ocean, and where the waves at high tide came up onto the windows and even above. Before he had completed the restaurant and kitchen which he was going to have there, the waves of the ocean broke the windows, and because of his illness, he boarded the windows up with 3 4x12s so that the water could not touch them, and he never saw that room completed. One of the first things that I did when I arrived in La Jolla was to complete that room. And on May, and in May 1941, we had our opening ceremonies. We accommodated 125 people. It was a very formal and gala party. Our guests included the officials of San Diego and La Jolla, many bankers and prominent people, all dressed in evening clothes. And the party was going along and nicely when at about 11 p.m. someone said, "The Grunion are running." That was a signal immediately for us to get busy, which we did. We supplied men and women with buckets. Some of them took off their shoes and stockings. The men rolled up their pant legs and went out on the north beach to gather grunion in these buckets. They ran that evening as I have never seen them run before or since, literally by the hundreds of thousands. Before too long, their buckets were filled, and our chef served French fried grunion to every one of our guests. If you've never had French fried grunion, you'd better try it. It's delicious. Cut it. Following completion of the Marine Room and its very successful opening, I started to build additional apartments. But unfortunately, the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor, and all of our apartment rentals were frozen on the rent that was in existence at the time Washington declared made a freeze on all rentals. That's not very good, of course. You want to cut it?
No.
You can. In spite of the freeze, the rent freeze, we built a new wing of apartments and found that we could fill it almost immediately. I then turned my attention to making the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club a real tennis club, and therefore contacted Perry T. Jones, the tennis czar of Southern California. He was pleased, tremendously pleased, that a nice new club was forming and would help him in his plan to promote tennis in Southern California. He even got me to serve as a member of the United States Lawn Tennis Association Directorate, and I found that I was connected with that group for many years to come. He also installed at the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club one of the greatest tennis tournaments that had ever been held in California, and one of the first. It was the Pacific Coast Men's Doubles Championship, which had been held in Del Monte Lodge in Monterey for years. And in 1943, they came to the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club. They were composed of our leading amateurs in those days, like Jack Kramer and Ted Schroeder, who, by the way, lives in La Jolla, and nearly all the great players that you have read and heard about. So that our club began to grow as a tennis haven, as well as a nice place to spend a weekend or longer to others who wish to just swim in the ocean and perhaps have a game or two. Cut it. As a matter of fact, the Pacific Coast men's doubles was actually the origin of the Davis Cup, the famous Davis Cup. Way back in 1890, young Dwight Davis of Harvard and three of companions, from Harvard and Yale, came to California thinking that they would be able to create good feeling between the East and the West if they played tennis at Del Monte Lodge at Pebble Beach. They came, and they enjoyed it so much, and the feelings created were so good that when Dwight Davis went back to New York, he and his family created the famous Davis Cup from Shreve, Treat, and Company. That cup is still in existence. The actual playing of that cup did not start until 1900, and the meeting was held in Massachusetts, where the United States' first Davis Cup team defeated Great Britain's first Davis Cup team. The next fine tennis tournament that Perry Jones helped me create at the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club was our annual invitational tennis tournament open to men and women, all men and women, and it proved to be very successful for many years. Later, the National Father and Son Hardcore Championships of the United States were held here at the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club and are still in progress only at this resort. Cut it a minute. What's going on? Going back to the Pacific Coast men's doubles for a moment, after the big money game for players, which I do not resent at all, came into existence, the Pacific Coast men's doubles became an intercollegiate tournament. And the fine college players who had not yet turned pro were allowed to play in it, receiving only trophies as prizes. That tournament still exists today, and the latest man, greatest international tennis player that played in it just 2 years ago was John McEnroe, who is now considered third, at least third, in the world today, and perhaps higher than that. Several other important tennis tournaments are still held annually at the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club. Ladies Senior Hardcourt Championships of the United States, 40 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old. The Men's Senior Hardcourt Championships of the United States, men 45. Now stop a minute.
Great.
Let's break the story of the Beach Club for a moment, Jack, and go back to a story or two about my two great aunts, Ellen Browning Scripps and Virginia Scripps. They were both very remarkable ladies. Ellen for her calmness, her sereneness, her ability to get at the root of any problem and solve it without trouble of any kind. Her interest in children was amazing, and she had a kindergarten in her own home for any children of La Jolla that wished to come. Sometimes there were 20 or 30 or 40 without any special party going on at all. Aunt Virginia, on the other hand, was a straightforward, damn it to hell, is that permissible here, excuse me, lady who expressed her views in no uncertain terms on all occasions. She was noted for keeping the streets of La Jolla clean. And if anybody dropped a paper bag or something that didn't belong on the sidewalk, she would come up to them, slap them on the back, and say, "Look, pick that up. This is La Jolla. We've got to keep this town clean." And they would do it. One other amazing story about Aunt Virginia was that in the early days, there was a train that ran between La Jolla and San Diego. And the station was right across the street from Aunt Virginia's Wisteria Cottage. She was going to town one day with a friend of hers, and they started to get on the train. And the friend said, "Oh, I've left my pocketbook back in the Wisteria Cottage. I'm going back to get it." The engineer said, "Oh, no, you're not. I'm pulling out of here right now with this one car and this engine." Aunt Virginia gave him one fierce look, ran up in front of the engine, lay down across the tracks, and said, "Come on." Of course, the engineer did not come on. End of that story. You haven't cut it off yet. Maybe. Now, how many of these are we going to have, young man? One other story about Aunt Virginia. She loved to acquire shells and seaweed. And in her room at Aunt Ellen's house, they had the walls decorated with all kinds of beautiful shells and dried out seaweed, and they were truly amazing. One day, when I was a youngster, perhaps 10 or 12 years old, I was walking along the beach with my .22 rifle, and above me were several pelicans, perhaps 300 yards high. I knew I could never touch them or reach them, but nevertheless, I aimed at one and pulled the trigger, and nothing happened. He flew on happily. But when I got back to the house, Aunt Virginia said to me, "William, did you shoot at a pelican?" And I said, "Yes, I did, Aunt Virginia." She said, "Well, I saw one on the beach after you were walking there, a dead one. And this is a very bad thing that you've done." I tried to tell her that I didn't think my little .22 bullet would reach the pelican, but for a while she wouldn't listen. She finally forgave me, and I am still sure that the pelican I shot at, I did not kill. All right. I forgot to say that she added that anyone that kills a pelican in La Jolla will have to go to jail. And you can imagine that I trembled both outwardly and inwardly. However, all was eventually forgiven. And I'm sure the pelican I shot at got away, safe and sound. Is that all right, Daddy? I don't know. How you do these things?
No, that's fine.